It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff and Gina are here. We'll talk about the big Samsung announcements, what cloud security means to Google, and Anil Dash will join us to talk a little bit about the notion of public versus private. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 265, recorded September 3rd, 2014. You can't handle the nudes. This Week in Google is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIG. And by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/TWIG. And by SmartThings, the easiest way to create a smart home. SmartThings lets you control your home using your smartphone from anywhere. For 10% off any home security or solution kit, visit smartthings.com/twit and use the code TWIT10. It's time for Twig This Week in Google. And, of course, as always, this wouldn't be Twig without the great Gina Trapani of ThinkUp. Always great to have her, also host of All About Android. And she got up early with me this morning. Early for you, but 9 a.m. your time, 6 a.m. ours. To do the Samsung event. It's good to see you again.
Yes.
Thank you for doing
it. Good to see you again, too. Hello again.
It's really nice to have you and Mike Elgin, and we did a special, which is available now on our feed. We'll talk a little bit about what Samsung announced, because it is Android-focused. Also here, Jeff Jarvis, couldn't do it without him, professor of City University of New York, of journalism. He is at buzzmachine.com, is where he blogs. It's great to have you again, Jeff. And we brought in Gina's partner, Anil Dash.
Hello, everybody.
So nice to have Anil here. If you're not familiar with Anil, you ought to be. He's been involved in the community for so long. I mean, your tweets often are, the conversations you have on Twitter are so important, so valuable. I became aware of Anil when he was an evangelist for Six Apart, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Typepad?
Like a decade ago.
Has it been that long?
Almost.
Yikes. Where else have you been?
Oh, a bunch of stuff. I was in the music biz for a while, newspaper biz for a while, and then, of course, the last several years has been working with Gina on ThinkUp, and that has been super exciting and fun.
Really neat. So are you the founder and CEO? What is your...
Co-founder with Gina, and we started the project as sort of an open source thing we were doing when we were working in a nonprofit, and it's just snowballed and grown. I think Twig folks especially probably know a little bit about ThinkUp, but it's been really, really fun to kind of watch everybody jump on board. And I think just the last month, I feel like we've done the best sort of new features and exciting stuff around it. So that's been the most fun I've had on working on this even for the past couple of years.
And of course, Anil's well known as a blogger at dashes.com, right?
Yeah, yep. And I've been contributing at Medium and used to write for Wired sometimes. So a lot of different places.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jeff.
Has the free sampling led to growth?
Yeah. I think it's one of those things where you sort of cross your fingers and you hope that you're talking to the right people that are going to understand what you're making when you make a new product. And I think fortunately you talk to the Twig audience and they're actually curious and interested. So that's it's nice.
So what's the story with this Prince blog post from last month, from July? I wanted to ask you, what is going on? You have a very long blog post.
Yeah. So I'm a fan of Prince. I think anybody who likes music, right?
Yeah.
And but I almost never write about him. So I think all my friends that are really, you're a huge fan and he does something and they sort of say, oh, you're going to write about it. And I pretty much never do. And last month, and I'll apologize in advance for all of us that are going to feel the pain of this statement. Last month was the 30th anniversary of Purple Rain.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Kidding.
30th anniversary. Wow.
Yes. 30 years. And so I thought, what would be something fun to do about the anniversary, and everybody would sort of do it. It was a big album. It sold a lot of tickets as a movie. Fairly obvious things. And what I did instead was, because this is – I'm okay at technology. I'm pretty good at prints. Is I wrote about
Your secret power is prints.
Totally. I wrote about how the song Purple Rain came together, and it was basically, you know, a good 5-10 years of Prince's career had sort of come together in this thing, and how did all of the members of the band contribute to it, and what were the aspects of it. I actually cut some stuff out that was about how the housing policy and zoning regulations in Minneapolis at the time influenced the song being created. Wow. But other than that, pretty much everything else is in there that could possibly shape the song. And it was one of those, like, I've been meaning to write this for about 20 years, so let me get it out there. And the response has been great. For music nerds, it's been really nice. And then for everybody else, they sort of politely distance themselves.
Oh, no, I was – and it reminded me of Wendy and Lisa, who I hadn't thought about in 30 years.
Sure.
Wendy will be celebrating her 50th birthday this year.
Yeah, but they're fantastic. Wow.
Are they still around? Are they still?
Yeah. So they do music composition. They got a special Emmy this year for.
Oh, good.
They composed for a bunch of TV series. So they're great. Good. They're really active on Twitter and Facebook, and like really just sort of smart and engaging with fans. So
I'm glad to see that. I'll have to find them on Facebook now that I'm a big Facebook fan. So Robert Scoble came in. He had been saying, challenging me, saying you're doing it wrong, Facebook. He literally said, Facebook is going to be it. In a year, you'll come back to me and say, oh, you are absolutely right. There is no other social network. Nothing else matters. Facebook's number one. And I said, you're crazy. I mean, Google Plus is so much better. He said, that's because you're doing it wrong. So on Sunday, he came in and we recorded an hour. And you know what? We were going to release it as a triangulation later this month. But there's been so much interest. I think we've got to move that up. People really want to see this. He showed me how to go through Facebook, how to categorize everybody, how to, give Facebook. It turns out if you are assiduous about giving Facebook signals about what you want, Facebook, he says it's artificial intelligence. There's a lot of, smart software behind Facebook to give you what you want if you just give it enough signals. And so I did that. I'm still not sure if I'm getting a great experience, but I'm giving it a try.
A very bold Robert Scoble prediction that Facebook will be a popular social network.
I think it is kind of bold. I mean, I keep waiting for Facebook to go away. He convinced me to put Facebook back on my mobile device and Messenger.
I don't know. Any place you get a billion people showing up is probably not going away anytime soon.
No.
I guess. Yeah, there's that network effect. I don't know. Anyway, we'll... it's still just as goofy as it was to me. In fact, the saddest thing is that Google Plus is getting more like Facebook, not less, and that's I don't like it. I've decided I'm going to and I've registered the domain names of, and I think this is what the world needs is a verified social network. Google can't do it because of the tying the Google services into this real personality, but anybody else could, where you have to send me a driver's license picture and today's newspaper, and I can demonstrably prove it's you, and this is going to be a verified social network. Wouldn't that solve all our problems with Twitter, especially? Jeff, what do you think? I already registered verified.zone.
I know a lot of a-holes by name.
Yeah, but don't you think that if you do know who they are, that really tempers that conversation a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I've been thinking about our talk last week. The show does that. And the idea that we're acting as if we're in a crowded space when, in fact, we're in this wide open space. And you know, you look at Twitter and say, oh, my God, I've got to talk to those people. Well, it's not actually that many people
right,
who actually see the tweets. And so, okay, you can announce some things there and do things there, but the world doesn't demand that you're there.
We know that now, thanks to Twitter analytics, how few people see our tweets.
Yeah. So I'm not sure it's worth all the hubbub and hoo-ha. I remain troubled by the places that come up with difficult people and difficult behavior. And I think that's really what you're trying to answer. And I don't know whether identity is it. Maybe it's Gina had the kernel of it, as is her habit. Maybe it's more about sharing signals about people who are nice people and people who aren't acting nice. I mean, I had a case where somebody we all love retweeted a an anti-twit troll who trawled me into his tuna net. That's how I noticed. And this person we love had retweeted it or had responded or something. And I said, that's a twit troll. You're feeding him. And our friend said, okay, great. Thanks for telling me. And, you know, I killed the reference. And so I think that in a society, you kind of band together in ways. So I think you're on to something partially, which is you want to know who someone is. But I think there's another thing, which is to get clever about how we recommend people to each other and what that matters. And there's got to be friction. There's got to be loss, which is what Mike Elgin's point was. You have to be able to lose some value by acting like an a-hole.
Well, there were some a-holes out there this week. This was the week that pictures of a great number of Hollywood celebrities were leaked. Apparently, hackers got into their accounts. We think of the best thinking right now, Apple said there's no structural flaw with iCloud or Find My iPhone. These were targeted attacks. And the best thinking is that there was, in fact, we know there was a flaw in Find My iPhone that allowed unlimited brute force style attacks, password attacks. It wasn't what we call rate limited. In other words, most sites, if you enter a password and it's wrong, it tells you, but it limits the number of times you could do that, or it slows the process down. It makes it difficult to do a high-speed brute force attack. Find My iPhone was not one of those. That, by the way, flaw was fixed on Monday after these photos were released. So the best guess of many, including Jonathan Jodarski, is that this brute force attack was used to get the passwords of these celebrities and that their iPhone or iPad backups, which were stored on iCloud, were then grabbed. And it was there that the photos came from. That's a little scary because that means other information, lots of information, was also grabbed in those backups. The photos posted on 4chan, most sites, including Reddit, responded, and Imgur responded pretty well. Even Perez Hilton, after initially posting images, realized what a mistake that was, pulled it down and apologized and said that in the heat of the moment I posted that, but that wasn't a good thing. So in some ways,
which is a really important moment, I think.
I think
we saw the beginnings of norms being agreed upon here. Now, it's weird to me that we gathered around nude celebrities, not around beheaded journalists.
Well, a similar thing happened with the beheaded journalists. I think it was a 1-2 punch, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Yes, I'll buy that.
And the second time that this beheading videos went up, they were not nearly as widespread, were they?
That's true. That's true.
I feel maybe
we're getting to some level of norms on this, and that includes the technology services.
If it gets sufficiently egregious, reasonable people go, whoa, wait a minute. Let's just hold on here.
Right. And it would be wrong to even look in both cases. So it's not just about being wrong to post them, not being wrong just to spread them. It's also wrong just to look, I think.
Yeah, so there's an interesting thing here where people make jokes about nudes leaking, right? And there's this sort of fake distance. One, pretending as if every attractive 20-something-year-old doesn't have nude pictures somewhere. And two, as if
even
this
some
was,
of us older, uglier fellas
right,
do.
Right.
Leo, right? TMI, Leo.
No, but
forbidden visual. I can't.
Oh, stop it! You can handle.
No.
It. Handle the nudes.
Jokes aside, to an approximation, everybody has
this is
something.
Normal behavior, and there's
photo,
nothing
right,
wrong with it. There's
right,
nothing
right.
wrong
it's,
with it.
It's totally normal. And then, you know, so there's at least a pushback against the sort of joking or I have a right to see it or whatever, and that's really good. Mm-hmm. And then the second step, the deeper conversation, especially in you know our context where we're talking about tech, is what were the defaults? What were the choices the platform made? And you look at, in the case of Apple – assuming that, you know, Apple is obviously a big player in this for most of these images. You know, what Apple does with your thumbprint is this really deeply secure, designed to never let it off your device, really smart decision about what the default thing it does when it can scan your thumbprint. It's treated like important private data. And the contrast to the default for iCloud being accessible, two-factor auth not being encouraged – that, you know, the rate limiting bug that you described, a whole series of choices, 5, 6, 7, 10 of them that all could have gone the other way that would have had an impact here. Mm-hmm. And they haven't felt the pain of that. And I think it's interesting because this is happening right before their big announcements next week, one of which we know, you know, from the developer conference is going to be about, please upload all your photos into the photo roll in iCloud by default with iOS 8. And that's going to be a real challenge for them because their whole value is simplicity, ease of use, you know, user experience, and cool factor. And all of that is being threatened by them having made, frankly, the wrong choices about their defaults and security.
And it's, defaults is another way, Neil, I think I agree, and to say policies. And so Twitter had a policy previously of trying their best not to delete accounts. And when it came to both the beheading and the celeb photos, they started deleting accounts. And I'm okay with that. But now that forces Twitter to say, well, what is your policy? Where are your lines? What are your limits? Where aren't they? And you're forced to have policies now, which platforms don't much like. Emily Bell wrote in The Guardian that technology companies aren't accountable. And I disagree with that strongly. I think that they're highly accountable, but they've got to recognize that they have to document that accountability.
I think Apple's going to suffer a big blow from this.
The whole cloud is going to suffer because of the stupidity of the press making this a cloud issue.
Right.
It wasn't a cloud issue.
Well,
it was a
theft issue. But to be fair, if you put something on the internet, there is a risk, and I've said this for a long time, that it could go public by accident or by flaw.
Yeah.
So you should be kind of aware of that. Apple's default was to upload those. I suspect that the people whose pictures were revealed did not even know that they were being uploaded to the cloud. Anybody who has pictures like that probably exerts a little bit of caution about how they get distributed.
But you could do everything right. You could follow the defaults, listen to Apple saying it's secure if you do this. You could even do what Apple said and enable two-factor authentication, which I think, you know, maybe the four of us
have. Their two-factor sucks, I might
It's
add.
Terrible, right? But you could do all those things right and still be vulnerable because of the choices Apple made. And they could have been different. It's not, obviously, if something's online connected, ultimately somebody can crack it. But we're talking about reasonable defaults, reasonable security, being less vulnerable to brute force attack. And Apple's made bad choices here and should be held accountable for it. There's nothing wrong with us putting, I mean, especially if you have this kind of platform, put some pressure on them to say, okay, now there's hundreds of millions of people that all have at least something incriminating.
What about the notion that maybe Apple should modify its camera program, as should every company modify the camera program so there's a switch, just as there is on your browser, that this is now going to be private browsing. This is going to be private photos. Please make sure that these are stored more securely.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
That would help.
Yeah, there's a ton of ways to make
end
a good
to end.
Experience.
Look, at the real solution, and Google's done quite a bit towards this in Gmail, is end to end encryption. Trust no one encryption. That before my stuff, there's nothing wrong with putting stuff on the cloud if only I can decrypt it. Right? And Apple needs to give us that tool specifically.
Yeah, theoretically, if you can make the experience good enough.
Well, and this is the problem. Apple has a huge investment in this notion of it just works, this thing about magic. And and this is one of the reasons there's two factors so poor is that why they still use security questions, which, by the way, they implicated in this hack.
Yeah. But the thumbprint's secure.
Thumbprint works.
It just
works. Yeah.
And it never leaves your device.
But remember, Apple has, we were pretty sure because there's been numerous stories about this. Apple on Tuesday will announce that they have deals with MasterCard, Visa, and American Express, Nordstrom, and others to do payments using those services on your iPhone, presumably using Touch ID and Passbook. Are people going to think twice now about using this? This is a huge blow to Apple. This is couldn't have been timed more poorly from their point of view.
Hope so.
It's not just Apple. I think it's going to hurt Google as well.
Well, as we talked about on Windows Weekly, Google and Microsoft should step forward and say, unlike Apple, if you turn on our second factor, you cannot, without this second factor ID, you cannot get any of your data from our cloud. You can with Apple. That's part of the problem is that you don't need two-factor to get the iCloud back.
Yeah.
Well, how can second factor, Gina, you've talked about this a little bit. How can second factor be made easier so that people will just, that for the default, people would not complain and they'd adopt it and we'd be in, what does it need?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. If I had the answer, I might not be sitting here right now. I'd have a really high-paying job at one of these companies.
Well, you lose it. We've talked about this on Security Now. When you do end-to-end trust no one encryption, you lose some of the capabilities people want, the ability to go look at your data on multiple devices, for instance, the ability to dedupe and stuff like that. Those things
They'll
go
say
away.
Goodbye for shifting from an iPhone to an Android or vice versa.
Right.
No cloud's going to let you do that if it's all encrypted. Right. Say, oh, you know, we'll get to it next quarter, next year.
So you
I mean, something like LastPass is multi-platform and does end-to-end encryption, right? Like I store my I can decrypt locally on wherever I have LastPass installed, which is across multiple devices.
That's
so
true.
I mean, it's possible.
That's a good point. It is possible.
I mean, LastPass is great software. We use it all the time. It's very reliable. It's also probably the most challenging user experience of any app I use regularly.
Really?
And maybe just because it's always there's always something that feels like a pain.
Well, security is a challenge. You know, that's not LastPass. Right. That's called security. And that's exactly why Apple has been so reluctant, I think, to do the completely secure thing. They want it to just work. And that's a trade-off between convenience and security. That's part of the problem.
The two factors are something you know and something you have.
Or something you are. There's three possible factors.
Right, and then the biometrics. Something you are. Those things, clearly, there's a lot of room to innovate around. There must be better ways than typing in that code that, you know, before the timer runs out on your app.
Steve's doing Squirrel, which is a very interesting form of authentication for websites, Steve Gibson. I mean, I think there are other ways to do this.
But I think that's more interesting than can we make the screen more curved and add one more inch of diagonal.
Yeah, but don't you think these companies are doing what people are asking them for? And what they think will sell, and a curved screen is something that everybody grasps.
I think after this week, people will be asking for how do I know that my I think it's a real question.
We talked about it on MacBreak Weekly. It's my opinion that Apple has to grasp the nettle and step forward on Tuesday and say, yes, we have always believed in protecting you online, and we now know we need to do even better. And here's
what are the odds they're going
to
say that?
Well, yeah, that's no chance.
I think they have to.
Not Tuesday, but they could say it.
I think they have to grasp the nettle. I think it's not a pleasant thing to do. But if they don't address it, there's going to be everybody knows this happened. And not everybody's clear on why it happened. I'm not even clear on why it happened or whether Apple's at fault. Apple needs to address this very, very aggressively. Steve Jobs never would.
Bets around the table. Bets that they're going to address it in a blunt and direct way. I say,
no. You know, their press releases tend to have less BS than most. They're a little more direct. There's no way they're going to do it on stage at Tuesday, right? That's all about selling their new phone. No chance. I think what they do is they let it cool a while. This is what they did with, you know, AntennaGate and all the other things. They let it cool a while.
That was a mistake with AntennaGate. That allowed it to blow
up. Yeah, it was.
Well, for better or worse, this is their pattern, right? Maybe they changed their pattern, but at least what they do historically, they let it cool a while. They'll come back maybe that Friday after in the lull between when they announce and when they ship a new device and say, you know, we hear you loud and clear, security matters. Here's what we're doing, steps 1, 2, and 3 and X, Y, and Z. And, you know, by the time the new phone ships, we'll have this in place. You know, maybe they can do that. I think it's actually the biggest challenge they have is internally they're going to want to say it's not a big deal. People's passwords got guessed. That can happen to anyone if your password gets hacked and you know are guessed by somebody, and that resistance is what they have to fight internally. Is that sort of deny, hope it goes away,
right?
Which every big company does.
I predict that there will be at least an oblique acknowledgement of this, and it wouldn't hurt Apple to say we're going to do better. We're committed to doing better. We are going to protect your data. That's their selling point at this point over Google.
We are
the one place you can put your stuff that's private, and if they can't address that, if they don't address that, that's a huge advantage. Look at Apple stock price today, lost $4.36, almost a 5% drop.
Go back to Google. What could Google do? Why are you saying that
this is an opportunity for Google to strike? To say
right, so what could,
we
what
know better? Like? We're geeks, and we. I mean, this is, again, nobody says this in an outright fashion, but you make it clear, you know, we're the computer scientists. We understand security much better than Apple does, and we offer you a secure solution.
Do we believe that?
Well, I don't. It's not whether
I don't know
you
if I believe,
I believe
that,
it,
but I certainly do believe it is a marketing opportunity, as Leo said.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I also like, this. I'm not to be a cynic. I think I'm getting a little sick, so I think maybe I'm just a little down. But you know, all of this has happened before. All of this will happen again. I mean, saying that Perez Hilton, after thinking about it a little bit, had a revelation and took the photos down. Like, this isn't the first celebrity like nude leak or sex tape that's ever happened, and it won't be the last. Like, is Perez really, or Gawker, or any of these sites really gonna, in the moment of heat, to get page views, gonna not do that again in the future? Like, I have a hard time believing that. You know, Matt Honan 2 years ago got hacked. What was Apple's response then? I mean, he, you know, it wasn't nude
photos,
fixed it. But his they addressed it, right? And it was a combination of Amazon and Apple, and Apple did suspend password resets over the phone immediately after or whatever. I feel like these things have always happened. They will continue to happen. The systems will iterate. The companies will make statements. But ultimately, you know, like the whole thing is kind of flawed, and we all just decide to live with it, right? Because the other option is...
It's going to be better. It's going to get better, Gina. Because I think the people are saying... you know what? This is wrong. And I feel but remember, in these previous releases, there wasn't this kind of disgust with it that there is today. And I really feel a distinct shift on this. It's like, this was too much. This is out of control. This is wrong.
Yeah, if we go back to, you know...
And companies are going to respond to what their customers tell them.
It's ancient history, but if you go back to, you know, the Paris Hilton sex tape or something, which is... a decade ago,
it was
now
generally greeted with salacious excitement and exuberance,
right? And it was also sort of people just joking about it.
And they said, "Poor Paris, that is sexual assault. That's a crime," and that's what people are saying.
And
today.
She
that's
was
very,
you know,
different.
A very young woman, and all these other things. And I think there's been a change there. It's not a huge. I mean, there's obviously still tons of pigs that are reveling in this, and you know, not dismissing that, but saying that there's some shift there. And then at the tech level, I think after Matt Honan was hacked is when Apple introduced its sort of weak two-factor auth around iTunes. They did sort of put out a statement, which at that point was still very rare. They weren't just weighing in on things back then, but they actually responded. Amazon made some changes. Now, none of these are solutions, but like in terms of moving the ball forward.
That's the key.
It had an impact.
There's not going to be a fix. But I mean, Gina, I don't remember people saying, is it right or wrong to look at these? I don't remember anybody saying that with Paris Hilton. They're saying it very much is the thought. You know, you shouldn't even, you're committing, you're part of the conspiracy. You're part of the crime to look at these. That's a very big shift, don't you think?
It is. And, you know, I mean, I wonder, I mean, whatever. I think that it's like culturally, it's more acceptable to slut shame Paris Hilton than it is Jennifer Lawrence for whatever reasons in public culture. I think that people
Anthony
love
Weiner.
Jennifer Lawrence.
Nobody said, gee, poor Anthony Weiner.
Yeah, I mean,
well,
people
he
laughed and made fun of him. And,
he had agency, but nonetheless.
He shared his photo. It's totally different.
Well, with another person, not publicly.
I mean, I often think it has to do with a lot of things. The people involved. I think Matt was a very, sympathetic character in his situation. I think Jennifer Lawrence is very sympathetic. I think that, you know, whatever, Kim Kardashian, Paris Hilton, they're just like, oh, you know, these dummies who are famous for nothing, like they deserved it. And I think that definitely plays into it. I look, the optimist in me does want to believe that this conversation evolves every iteration of it, right? But this will continue to happen. And I like to think that I surround myself with folks who, you know, will speak up about not saying, you know, about avoiding victim blaming, which is what goes on a lot. It still goes on. Yeah. Maybe it's going on less. I hope so. But yeah, I mean, the whole thing's a bummer. But I think it'll continue to happen. And look, you know, are people really going to demand? There's a data breach every few months. It feels like a major data breach at all different companies. And I just don't know. I've just sort of accepted that's part of this,
but Gina, part of what we have to do is change the rest of the architecture. Where, I mean, for putting nude pictures aside, talk about just matters of transactional security. Oh my God, they have my credit card number and blank, and they can now rob me. Well, what's wrong in that picture is that if all you need is a number, you know, you can get years ago you could still get them off carbon copies of credit card slips. That's what we have to change. So we have to look at a lot of the ways in which a leak causes harm or causes a vulnerability and come up with solutions from the other side of it.
Yeah, I'm on the board of the Data and Society Research Institute, which is Dana Boyd's institute for looking at big data and all the implications it has on society. And she had hosted an event. The White House was doing a report on big data. One of the questions was basically about Social Security numbers, when they get leaked. And basically, you had a room of 100 experts on big data and then me sort of crashing the party. And they're asking what are the odds that 10 million Social Security numbers get leaked, let's say, in the next decade? And, you know, show of hands, how many people think that'll happen? And basically every hand goes up. They say, well, what are the odds, you know, how many people think 100 million Social Security numbers might get leaked? And most of the hands are still up. So and then, of course, credit cards, I don't think there's anybody, certainly in the United States, there's nobody that hasn't gotten that letter saying your credit card number was probably leaked and we'll, you know, you can free enroll in credit protection from us and we'll pay for it, whether it was Target or, you know, all these other hacks. So the universe of like, what if, can I be secure? It doesn't exist. We're all
hacked. Right. So engineers presume a system is going to be gamed. This is the way now the data is going to be gamed. Full stop. So what we have to change is, again, this doesn't address nude photos and theft in that sense, that kind of violation. But in terms of the data breaches that you mentioned, Dina, I think we're looking at it the wrong way. How do we it's how do we stop the data from being breached? That horse is running over the horizon and it's halfway to Australia by now. Instead, we've got to presume the data will be breached. So then where are we vulnerable then and stop that? And that's where it goes back to things like how to do transactions. Does the fingerprint thing do it or other things? I don't know. I wish I could write about this with any authority. It's the Steve Gibsons of the world who are going to tell us better.
Well, I now remember why we had Anil on, because of his great post on Medium about Public. And when you mentioned Dana Boyd, that reminded me that you had a back and forth with Dana over.
Sure. And I love the conversation, by the way, that you all had about that. I appreciated that.
Yeah, I thought really interesting. We'll talk a little bit about that. We also have a Google changelog coming up. I'm sorry to hear you're not feeling well, Gina. Do you feel up to the Google changelog?
I always.
We have worked you hard. You've been on. This is your third show in 24 hours. It's not fair.
I know. It's been a marathon.
It's really
terrible. I don't know how you do it, Leo.
It's really terrible. No one should have to do three shows. Oh, never mind.
Don't say it. Don't say it, boss.
And no one should ever. Never mind. But anyway, hang on and hang in there. We're gonna wrap this thing up as quickly as we can, so you get to go home and I get to go home. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace. Love the Squarespace. You know, it's funny because Anil, I got to know Anil through the blogging platform TypePad, and then Vox, which was a very cool idea. And I really missed Vox when it went away. Squarespace in many ways reminds me of that. It's the hosting plus the software to make it so easy to create a great website, whether it's your blog, whether it's something, an e-commerce site, because they've got incredible e-commerce. If you're an artist or a photographer, your online portfolio, Squarespace makes it simple and makes it modern. And this is what I really like. And I have learned now, after doing this for a few years, that keeping up with the web is a non-trivial thing. The styles change, the technologies change. The good news is with Squarespace, you don't have to. They've got the best engineers working day and night to create modern sites. Their current templates are mobile responsive. That means they look good on any size screen. They are e-commerce enabled, so it's a simple thing to flip the switch. In fact, even the $8 a month site, you can sell something or take donations. I'm a big fan. And of course, they realize that the mobile experience is so important, not only for your viewers, but for you. That's why they have some incredible mobile apps, like the new Metric app for iPhone and iPad, which allows you to check site stats like page views, unique visitors, social media follows. Their blogging app makes it easy to post and even monitor comments. They have a logo creator on their website. I love this new one. This is the Portfolio app. If you're a photographer, this app pulls your images from your website to create a beautiful online portfolio, the kind of thing you would show your clients, for instance, on your iPad or your iPhone. So you can go up to a bride with the iPad and have a beautiful presentation and not have done anything. It just comes from your website. All of this starts at $8 a month, and that includes the domain name free when you sign up for a year. But you can try it. It's even better. You can try it for 2 weeks absolutely free, no credit card required. Import all your content from TypePad or Blogger or any of the other APIs. Squarespace makes it as easy. And their 24/7 support right from the Squarespace offices in New York City makes sure that you'll never have a problem that you can't solve. Start your free 2-week trial, no credit card required. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code TWIG. You'll get 10% off, and we'll get a little nod from Squarespace, which I like. That's squarespace.com. Click the Get Started button, and then if you decide to buy, offer code TWIG. Anil Dash joins us from ThinkUp, Gina's partner at thinkup.com. Jeff Jarvis is also here. And we do a thing every week, Anil. I think you might know about it. It's called the Google Changelog. Chad just got back from vacation. He's still
the Google Changelog.
Still ending the sponsor read there.
Now Gina Trapani with the latest from the Google. That's Jeff. I'm sorry, Chad.
Chrome's 64-bit build for Windows just got promoted from the Canary and Dev channels up to the stable channel, which means that if you're running 64-bit Windows, you can get 64-bit Chrome, and that means that it's just faster and more secure and more stable and can take advantage of all that extra memory space to address.
Is Chrome 64-bit on all the other platforms? I know I'm in the beta channel on the Mac. I'm 64-bit. I think this was the last platform maybe to go 64.
I believe that it is.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
Google rebrands Google Enterprise with a friendlier name, Google for Work. That's just this week. The new name is supposed to be friendlier and more inclusive of small businesses and organizations and even lone entrepreneurs and hackers using Google services like Search and Android and Cloud Platform. Nothing about Google Enterprise products actually changes. It's just the name. So it's now Google for Work. Which, you know, whatever. I don't know
how friendly that is. It will mean nothing to you guys, but it means something to Leo. I'm reminded of Maynard G. Krebs.
Why do you always do the old crap with
me? That's wow. Tell us. Let's gather around the campfire and hear about Krebs.
Who's that? Who?
Do a search, Chad. Please do a search for Maynard G. Krebs.
It's a Toby Gillis reference, right?
Right. If you want to search for Krebs, you have to look on Alta Vista because it's pretty
expensive. Maynard G. Krebs was the character played by.
He's mean.
Character, the beatnik character on Dobie Gillis, played by, of course, Gilligan.
No offense, Buster, but why don't you just play golf?
Of course, like that, I feel like I'm home.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's all right, Mom. I have to go upstairs anyhow and start my homework.
Work!
Maynard, I meant the kind of thing we do at school, not the other kind.
Well, the kind of what?
Work.
Work!
Maynard.
There we go.
Work!
All right, that was it.
I was waiting for that punchline there. It was like,
The problem is, Jeff, that people don't know what enterprise means. For the longest time, I didn't know what it meant.
That's true. That's true. Absolutely right. Right. You know, Leo, worse than that. I sat in business meetings where people talk about enterprise. It's one of those words like fungible.
Yeah.
I was embarrassed to ask.
Yep.
And I just waited until a definition would waft my way.
Well, you see, we got a B2E solution here. We find that the B2C solution has been migrated upward to the B2E solution. And we now feel the enterprise is the future for this company. And I go,
Enterprise is easy. You just add 3 zeros to the price. That's all it means. It's not.
No, enterprise means that you gave up your dreams of serving consumers. And so now you're going to try to go after companies.
Oh, that's a little too close to home. When I met Leo, I was selling a product that had just become an enterprise product.
Yikes.
So I've been there too,
friend.
Yikes.
But yeah, I mean, aside from Bob Denver's least interesting role, there's an interesting thing here with Google.
Wait a minute. He had more than two?
Well, I can't imagine that. I think Gilligan is clearly the superior. I'm not
going to go. Is it really? I don't know. I think Maynard G. Krebs is kind of.
Maynard G. Krebs was a great role.
Seminal role.
I don't know. I wasn't alive then, so I'm guessing.
By the way, Bob Denver looks more and more like Bill Gates as he ages. I don't know what exactly is going on here, but this. Doesn't that look like Bill Gates now?
Wow. Found a
tech hook. Yeah.
There's a tech hook for everything.
For everything, yes.
But I think that going from enterprise to at work is really a reflection of Google Apps succeeding in government, succeeding in education, yep. Right? Education. And all these things are, we're not business. We're not. Because why else would you have this meeting and say, look, we're going to rebrand. The most important thing we can do is change the name from enterprise to work. And it's, well, where are the dollars? And it's, they want to put Chromebooks into schools, and they want to put Google Apps and Google Docs into government. And those are the only places that are going to object to calling work enterprise.
Okay. Yeah, and I was trying to get to a long-winded joke there, but I agree. I think it makes sense, and I think it says that this is ready for prime time. It's ready for your office. I have this problem trying to convince my institution to switch over to Google Docs, and I'd be a lot happier if they did. I'm not sure the word change is going to do it, but maybe if they believe there's a suite of seats there, a suite of services there that makes it make sense. All right.
By the way,
there is Google Apps for Education.
Go ahead. Yeah,
there is
I think that's why they Yeah, I think that's why they went work in education. I think they wanted parallelism. Yeah. What I think.
Well, and the URL is still google.com/enterprise. So I think that kind of tells you most of what you need to know.
Move on the change. Well, one last Dobie Gillis fact. Bob Denver received, according to IMDb, $250 an episode for his work as Maynard G. Krebs.
Wow.
Work?
That's why he screamed.
No wonder. Work?
All right, moving on. Google Play's beautiful design collection of apps for Android just got updated. The beautiful design collection features apps handpicked by Google to show off great Android UI design. Today's update includes apps starting to implement UI elements from Google's new material design. That's coming in Android L this fall, of course. New apps in the collection include Airbnb, Duolingo, Lumosity, Spotify, Runtastic, and Yahoo News Digest. So starting to get a peek of material design ahead of time from these apps. And finally, this is a new one on me. Apparently it's been a while, but they're testing some tweaks to it. Google's testing a new search box inside their search results for certain sites like Amazon, the White House, or Stanford. So to see in action, and I got this in some of my tries and not all, so this might be an experiment that, you know, won't work for everyone. But if you search for Microsoft, say, you'll see, you know, the top result for Microsoft will be Microsoft.com, and below that there will be a search box to search inside Microsoft, so a site search box in their search results. Works for Stanford, works for White House. They all do Google site search. But if you search for Amazon and you get the search box, it will actually take you to Amazon search results. So clearly kind of one of these, one of Google's experiments with, you know, making the search results more useful. And interesting to see them pointing to someone else's, you know, particularly Amazon's search results as well. So but not everybody has it, but kind of interesting.
Augurs against antitrust complaints if they do that.
Ah, very clever.
Yeah. Yep, yep. And actually, we should, outside of the changelog, we should discuss the how to eat sushi Google search results as well, but we'll do that later. For now, that's all I've got.
And that's
you don't want any of that on you, huh, Gina?
No.
<Nope.
laughs>
Am I going to get nude pictures or something? And that's the Google change log. Apparently, this advice from Google, no longer there, by the way, on how to eat sushi. This is from. Should I even mention this? Yeah, I think I can.
This is
from Google Answers, and so it showed up in a knowledge box, right?
Well, it's a knowledge. Yeah, it's the knowledge graph, right? Which basically just parses data from other websites and presents it inside of search results. So you would Google how to eat sushi, and you get a few whatever instructions back. From
it's
a
okay to use your fingers to eat cut sushi rolls. Don't combine ginger and sushi or ginger and soy sauce. Ginger, the pickled ginger, is a palate cleanser. When dipping sushi in soy sauce, dip fish side down. Didn't know that. Very useful. And never shake the soy sauce off sushi. That's like shaking your wanker in public. What? What?
But it's, you know.
Thank you,
I mean,
Google.
Whatever. It's not a big deal.
It's not
obviously,
a huge one.
It's text scraped from another site, but people made a big deal about it because it was kind of like what we're talking about with native advertising. It maybe is not clear that this is text from another site. Right. So people are saying, oh, Google's saying this thing about how to eat sushi when Google's not saying it at all. But it's the presentation that creates some of the confusion.
And to their credit, it was a Googler who outed Google. Stephen Lau, a software engineer with Google Glass, tweeted PSA, public service announcement. Google how to eat sushi. Do it now before it gets fixed.
And this is sort of live by the sword, die by the sword in terms of the knowledge box or one box. Right. Because this was from a Vice article. And Vice, of all publications, should be pretty obvious, is going to have some stuff that maybe you don't want to show on a Google page.
Despite its name, I thought Vice was actually pretty
It's very credible. They do great journalism, and then they also do a bunch of this, right?
Okay.
So it's both. Well, like everything. There's no – every media outlet is very, very highbrow and very, very lowbrow today, right?
It is true, isn't it? Yeah.
And there used to – I don't think it even happens anymore, but there used to be these objections about bringing content in on one boxes and knowledge boxes because you're competing with publishers in some way, and they don't have any real – choice but to accommodate that because it's also the thing that's going to drive more traffic. And so when you bring in, you know, with Wikipedia, I'm sure there are tons of Wikipedia articles that have been defaced at the top, automatically scraped into a knowledge box on Google, and you can get some ridiculous results if you take a look. That should be one of the reasons that Google should even be more cautious about bringing this content in. I mean, I think I'm old-fashioned, but I remember a time when Google would give you results that took you to another site. And as much as it sort of has been conventional wisdom that, oh, it's convenient, it's easy, and it's faster to get it here, I still like that idea that they used to be about taking you to the content as opposed to bringing the content into their site.
Well, you do sound like an old-timer when you say Google gave you results that brought you to another site. Those days, wasn't that the purpose of Google?
I think it took you all to Vista. Yeah, yeah.
Gina and I got up a little bit early this morning, a little earlier for me than you, 6 a.m. for me, 9 a.m. for you, to go to Berlin virtually for the Samsung Unpacked event. They called it, Chapter 2? Because it was the second, part two? Yeah. The second Unpacked event.
Unpacking
of the year. They did the Galaxy S5 earlier this year. This announcement was the Note 4, Galaxy Note 4, a 5.7-inch phablet that features an improved camera, both front and back. They made a big deal about selfies. I think selfies are increasingly going to be something important, the front-facing camera. And not for Skype or FaceTime, but for pictures. They even showed, what do they call it? Usi?
A Wi-Fi.
Which is
so you could pano. It was like basically a selfie pano, right?
Right.
And I really liked that the shutter actually. There was a hardware shutter on the back of the phone that I actually was like, yes, I want that. We've seen that on other phones, of course.
Yeah, but that's a good idea. I mean, this is Samsung. They just throw everything against the wall and see what sticks.
How wide does your head have to be for a panoramic selfie?
To get the background more. And that's what you're seeing in these selfies now. And that's why the selfies stick, because you don't want just you. You want context.
That live demo was great. They got the three announcers plus the entire audience behind them. And, of course, they did the callback to Ellen's selfie at the Oscars, the Wi-Fi with all the celebrities in it or whatever, which made a lot of sense.
And which they paid for, we should mind.
Which they paid for, I'm sure, handsomely, no doubt. And, of course, they had the iPhone music. Go ahead, Jeff, sorry.
I was going to make a joke. Obama needs it to get the ears in the selfie.
I have a giant pumpkin head, and I'm fine with people having the selfie stick. I was down by the World Trade Center, and these tourists had a selfie stick out, and it was sort of, I mean, at first you're like, that's strange, and then after a while it's like, that's not actually that different than having a tripod or something that people have been doing. So I'm fine with that, but I'm a little, like some of the things, well, this is very Samsung. It's like they just are trying whatever and seeing what sticks, and I'm like, be about something. Have a point of view. Say, this is what we're trying to do. I wish they were more directed and said, okay, this is the selfie feature we want to enable, and this is the reason why.
I'm trying to see if they posted on their Samsung account the picture. This is the image from the event of the wide selfie. But I was going to try to find the picture that they took. They should have tweeted it. Because it really did. It looked good. It was really pretty
and
impressive.
It was a portrait pano. I was deeply troubled that these photos were taken in portrait.
Well, if you're going to do a pano and you do it in portrait, you get more pixels.
You get more height. I get that. Still, it troubled me.
here's a shot from the video of it. And it looks like, although it's hard to tell, it came out pretty well.
It did.
Yeah.
It did.
And,
I will credit Bradley Cooper for landscaping that business on the Oscars. Okay, Ellen was going to portrait it.
He knew
Bradley's
what he was doing. That means you're a geek. Oh, that's probably why. Sure.
Right. Yeah. I mean, these people stand in front of cameras for a living.
They kind of know a little bit about this stuff.
Hope so.
Yeah, hope so. They also showed the Note 4 Edge, which is a little tiny bit smaller than a Note 4 because it then has a kind of like 150, 160 pixel curved screen on the side. They say that's a separate screen, by the way, now I'm reading, that shows you...
Shows you what? What? It's like a ticker, nothing. But it goes the up the side of your phone diagonally. Hit. And it's got its own SDK.
Yeah. It shows you that one engineer was able to get a little sliver of curved screen working, and they wanted to ship it no matter what, even if it had no point.
Well, and in fact, when they showed it, I don't know if I can... Yeah, here's the publicity shot. In the publicity shot, if you look closely, you'll notice that the... Look at the temperature on the right there. It's upside down.
Perfect. Ooh.
So, and this is in their shots. So,
at least maybe the photo's not faked then.
They have a little bit of something to work on there. It also means it would be very hard to hold that phone because the Mashable,
you're going to hit buttons when you don't mean to.
Mashable has video with a hands-on once I get past the
I'll make another old person reference, which is, do you remember Side Talking? Have we?
Side Talking.
So Side Talking, this is probably 2003. Nokia released the first N-Gage, and they had some other business phones like this, where instead of you talking into your phone like a normal person would, you talked into the side of it.
See, it's upside down. Maybe it reorients itself.
And everybody made fun of it on the internet for like a good couple weeks about why would you ever talk into the side of your phone? Doesn't make any
sense.
This is side touching.
Side touching.
It's like side touching.
And I don't like the sides are for buttons. Sides aren't. For touching.
They are buttons. They're just virtual buttons.
With this phone, I pull it out of my pocket, and it's like it's a gigantic USB because I'm constantly turning it around, saying, "Is it upside down? Right side? Right side?"
This way you'll know.
Yeah, this way you'll know.
I'm going to reserve judgment. It on the face of it looks like it's not going to be great, but and then they announced also a watch that is clearly way too big. This is we were just counting off the air. I think there are six or seven watches from Samsung. They actually showed three today, including a watch that looks like it's an iPhone strapped to your wrist. they didn't. By the way, none of the prices or availability was revealed for any of this.
They showed three watches today. I thought it was just the curved six icon grid watch today, and the VR and the Edge.
Well, they had a band. Remember that had an e paper. They didn't call it a watch.
That was Sony. Was
that Sony? You're right.
Yeah, Sony. Yeah, that was Sony.
Had it. You're right. I'm confusing the two. Sony had the their first Android Wear watch. There it is.
Right.
And the band. And it was this big Galaxy watch that they showed. You're absolutely
right. So Samsung
right.
might only be offering five watches, not six.
I might have missed counted. The Gear S smartwatch is the size of an iPhone on your wrist and has a band to match, which is interesting.
By the way, Leo, you're unfashionable now officially.
I'm so out of it with my old Android Wear watch.
And your white band.
And my white band. Oh, no. I tried to change the band and it didn't work, so I'm just going to stick with the white band.
Oh, really?
Well, I realized I'm going to have a new watch any minute now anyway. Why bother?
Either the Guacher or the 360 is going to show up or the S. Yeah.
They also announced a virtual reality helmet that they've worked on in conjunction with Oculus Rift. John Carmack joined the stage to talk a little bit about the technology, and they've modified the Android kernel to make this thing fast. You slide a Note 4, and it will only work with a Note 4 in this headset, and you've got Oculus Rift-style virtual reality. This is just, of course, like the Google Cardboard version that was given away at Google I.O., a little spiffier and I'm sure a lot more expensive and equally nauseating, probably.
Who is the Phablet headset user? Who's that person? Who is that? I've never met the Phablet headset target audience.
Well, they made Scoble.
Yeah, Scoble. They made one. They made one use case, which actually I thought wasn't bad, which is in an airplane. They said it's like having 127 being 2 feet away from a 127-inch screen.
watching a movie.
That's not something I want.
Clockwork Orange. That's a threat. That's how you program people's brains.
Keep your eyes open and the stewardess could drop a little Visine in once in a while.
No, the chair in front of you will slam back and hit your head.
Boom.
because it's so far extended.
Well, anyway, and that looked like it was a prototype.
Robert Scoble put it on his head is not a state. That's he'll put anything on his head.
Yeah, and has.
Right. So
this does require the Note 4. This won't work with just any phone. You can see it's carefully made to fit the Note 4 exactly.
Cardboard.
Really, it's crazy how well Google preempted this whole thing with cardboard.
Yeah, they knew it was coming.
Well, it's also a brilliant thing Google did where they literally took the second most costly acquisition Facebook has ever made and said, we can do this for $1 worth of cardboard. in terms of just,
it was the ultimate troll.
It was such tastefully done, completely mean-spirited thing. I loved that.
Yeah.
That was great.
That was really good. We can do that. Oh, yeah, we can do that.
Just ruin their birthday party. It was so good.
Right after the Samsung event at IFA. By the way, all of those devices will be available someday. They announced that. And
no, one is going to be in October, right?
The Note 4 will be out in October and available in all five U.S. carriers, including U.S. Cellular.
I don't think that strap a note to your head thing is ever going to be available.
Well,
I think they'll say it got released, but there will be no actual human.
Maybe Google Glass. How many people bought Google Glass?
A few schmucks like me.
Yeah.
ask me when I last turned it on.
Right. I spent a considerable amount of money on the Kickstarter project for the Oculus Rift, and I just Sunday gave away my Oculus Rift dev kit to a young lad on the street.
But there's protective safety goggles that look nicer than
I know, it's silly. Kit. They made a point about how good it looked, actually. Right after was the Sony event, and the Sony folks announced a new Z3 phones with very high resolution screens, very high quality, 20 megapixel cameras. And then, of course, this is just the beginning. Tomorrow is the Motorola event, not in Berlin, but unaccountably in Chicago, where no one is right now. And the entire city is empty. And they're going to announce the Moto 360 flat tire watch.
Flat tire watch.
The 270, yeah.
Yeah, and then, yes, and then the Moto X and a G2, both of which I think the G has turned out to be kind of a successful, a surprise success. I love the Moto X, and I'm looking forward to the next generation. I think it was Android Central that said it will be called the Moto X, just the new Moto X, and the G will be called the G2. And still
will
be very
available,
affordable.
Yes.
Yeah, well, your guess is as good as mine. This fall, I guess. Now, all these companies have been a little bit cagey about release dates, which inclines me to think they're rushing to get these announcements out before Apple makes its announcement next week.
For sure. And what model was that Motorola that I loaned you? I don't remember what that thing was.
It was the Moto X.
Yeah, that was a great phone. I just liked it, but I didn't remember what model.
One of the best phones of the year, even though it was kind of a little bit below par on specs. I just loved its functionality. If this Moto X brings it up to flagship standards and retains some of that always-on functionality, I think it's just going to be a great phone.
Despite the red hat, it wasn't a terrible phone. It was a pretty good phone.
I like the red hat.
Oh, man.
You could do that on your cardboard. Did you know that?
The red hat thing?
Yeah.
The flying hat?
Yeah.
Well, it makes sense, right? Because that's what it was.
Yeah.
Anil got like the special edition that came with like a special box with like a forest that you'd unfold it or whatever.
Wow.
And it came with a little plastic red hat that had a magnet on it that you could touch to the screen to invoke the software.
Oh,
it was
cool.
It was like absurd beyond. I couldn't believe it.
It was literally the prettiest packaging I've ever seen, certainly of any electronics
device.
How do
I get on that list?
Probably nice. I don't know. I think it was like it must have been an error. They must have mistaken
me. Anyone on earth should have that. It's Chad.
Because he's got red hair. He should have a red hat to go along with it.
Yeah, I got on the wrong list somehow where they were like they mistook me for somebody that was literate in these things.
Perhaps you mistook me for someone who cares.
No. It's a great phone. It's an amazing phone.
Like
and I actually I liked the red hat experience. I thought it was very cinematic and engaging.
There's two of them. So there's the red hat and then there's a squirrel in his nuts.
Yeah,
right. The mouse or the squirrel, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I think I got an email about you can go check that out. I didn't do that, but the phone itself is great. It's a great piece of hardware. So I think any improvement to that will be awesome.
Tomorrow there will be a Dyson vacuum cleaner announcement as well.
Well, there you go.
Secret product.
I'm headed to IFA on Sunday night.
Are you?
Oh, good for you.
It's over, isn't it?
Are there good IFA parties?
No, there's some extended, you know, IFA Plus thing I'm speaking of.
Oh, good.
So hello, Berlin.
And then somebody in the chat room, apparently talking about our mocking of the virtual reality helmet, says, "You guys don't even know what it's for. You're not funny." So apparently,
that's fair.
One guy
was the problem.
Wants it.
Last week, this was the problem. Last week with
Twitch,
trying to explain Twitch to me. Yeah. Oh, the abuse we got.
I will gladly fall on the sword of unfunny about wearing a phablet on your head.
Where do you stand on Twitch.tv, the gaming network?
I think it is every bit as interesting as watching sports.
Okay, there you go.
So you two, like me, are not a real man? Is that it, Anil?
I meant exactly what I said. You can tell from my tweets, I tweet a lot during award shows.
Yeah, baby. Yeah, the Golden Globes, baby.
Yeah.
Nobody watched the Emmys, though, apparently.
No, real award shows.
Real
Emmys
award shows. Shows that count.
Like Grammys, Oscars, that kind of stuff.
All right. So it's the crazy season. Lots of products coming out. Next week, Apple's announcement. Will we then be done? I don't know. It's kind of hard to imagine.
Well, where do we get in the watches, you think?
No idea. I think none of this is... apparently, they don't even have FCC approval for the Note 4. So we're a few months off, maybe even.
No, I mean the...
the iWatch. You're asking about the iWatch? Is the iWatch going to happen? I don't know.
I think it'll happen, and Apple wants to freeze the market.
Yeah.
Right? So they want to say, like, don't buy before Christmas. We're not going to be ready till next year. We're going to show you something really cool, but you got to wait. It's a perfect way to do it because it gives developers time to get ready. It ruins Christmas for everybody else, and still we'll sell a bunch of iPhones while people get ready for, you know, save up to be able to buy a watch in the new year.
But here's the question, Anil. So if you're an Apple person, you're an Apple person. If you're an Android person, you're an Android person. Can Apple announce things that will convert people back from Android?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's actually a lot more flux and movement between the platforms than people realize. You know, people are up for renewal. They look at all the phones that are out. They're outside of techies, there isn't a huge amount of allegiance. They're like, oh, this screen's bigger, or my friend has this app and I should get that. I don't think it's much more thought than that. I think the conversation is Android or Apple.
I tried to woo my kids with Motorola X's after they broke their iPhones. I said, well, I'm not buying you another iPhone because a new one's coming out, but try this Moto X. Both of them. Well, Henry said, oh, I can't figure out how to charge it. That's such a lie.
Right. Well, kids are a different thing, right?
But that's no the market. Question.
Right, but there's no question.
They're 20 and 22. These are the guys you want to get if you're Apple or Android.
High school and college, there's no question Apple is the cool brand.
Yeah, they want Apple.
And this is where the brand I don't buy into a lot of the fragmentation story around Android, but in terms of brand fragmentation, Samsung is not cool in this way. They're respected. They're fine. They're not cool. Samsung is not cool. Google's own phones are not a factor. You don't have a brand that has that cachet that they do, you know, of having an Apple logo on something. So I think in that regard, for young people, it's not the same thing. It's just a different kind of product.
I am probably going to go back to the iPhone with a bigger screen and customizable keyboards. But I am also bracing myself for disappointment. So we'll see what happens. But I'm one of those people who's looking forward, actually, to going back to the iPhone. Mostly because of the variety of apps that get released on iPhone only. It's very frustrating.
Yeah, the apps are still better. They still are.
Good stuff.
But that's
Android.
An absurdity right there. That's geeks not looking at enough market research.
Well, that's assuming that any of these decisions are based on some rational process.
Right.
And that's not how we buy a thing that we hold in our hand all day.
It's totally emotional. Because from a technical point of view, there's not much difference between any of the platforms.
No. What I'm talking about, Anil, is the number, and I face this all the time in the news business, where they'll write an app. I mean, NYT Now, they still haven't written an Android version. That's absurd.
Right.
Absurd. There's a huge audience out there.
What do we think their goals are?
Instagram says, we'll write Hyperlapse for Android as soon as the hardware capability is there. Or the API is there. So that's a technical reason. But I see apps every day. I see apps that are iPhone only.
I think the app gap is getting smaller. It's still there. It is getting smaller.
I agree.
If you're looking at, you know, small startups, you know, putting out, I mean, yeah, there's going to be a couple apps that come out on iOS first. It happens less than it used to. And yeah, I don't know. It's, I mean, there's certainly still this notion that, you know, you got to prove yourself in iOS first, and that's where the money is. You know, that Android users don't spend as much money on apps or an in-app purchase. I also think that that gap is narrowing, if that still even remains true now. But yeah, no, I agree. I think it's really stupid for companies to you know, release iOS only first and then just say, oh yeah, you know, sometime down the road we'll release to Android. It just doesn't make sense market share wise.
We're going to take a break, come back with more. Our show today brought to you by Personal Capital. Personal Capital is an app on almost every platform, including Android Wear. This is one of the first companies to make an Android Wear app. And I'll tell you why that's actually very useful. Personal Capital allows you to put all your financial accounts into one clear, easy-to-understand dashboard. Your checking, your savings, your car, your boat, your loans. Most importantly, your investments, your planning for the future, for retirement. And gives you a sense of how you stand, where you're overpaying in fees, where you're not underperforming, where you're not getting what you should be getting in terms of your investments, where you need to rebalance, things like that. It couldn't be easier. You enter it all in and you see it all on one nice screen. And then the app is awesome on the Android Wear because it means you get relevant, timely updates on your finances. So, you know, a stock to worry about, things like that. Personal Capital is great and it gives you tailored advice on optimizing your investments. So it's the best way to plan for the future. 500,000 people now are using Personal Capital. What was that number above? It was like $100 billion in finances being managed or entered into the Personal Capital interface. Really is amazing. We first met them when Bill Harris, the founder, started the company a couple of years ago, and we've been very proud to be associated with them. Hey, so here's the best part. I didn't even tell you the best part. It's free. PersonalCapital.com/Twig to get started. It'll just take you a couple of minutes. Immediately, you'll reap the benefits. PersonalCapital.com/Twig. People say, well, how do they monetize? A couple of ways. Of course, they monetize by, just like, you know, you would imagine, by offering you better deals. But also, some of you, not all of you, but some of you will get calls if you're managing a lot of money from a Personal Capital certified financial planners who are not on commission, but will help you with your finances and your investment. And it's really great advice, too. I use them. PersonalCapital.com/twig. So, if you've seen random favorites inserted into your Twitter timeline, it's because you don't either follow enough people or the people you follow aren't really doing anything. So they've decided, Twitter's decided to spiff things up by sticking favorites in there. Dick Costolo explains in a tweet, you get favorites when you pull to refresh twice and we have no new tweets both times.
The response to the tweet, response to that in that article is precious.
And then Ed Young responds, hilarious if true. Everyone, Twitter, why? Twitter, cause monkey press lever. Monkey get no snack. Monkey sad. Hey, you know, this is called reruns, friends. Nothing good on TV. Here's some of your favorite tweets.
What a missed opportunity from Twitter, right? So this is this thing where all the sort of Twitter junkies are really mad. Why are these tweets showing up? I didn't follow this person. If I wanted them to retweet it, I would retweet it. And you're just showing me favorites of my friends. All this confusion and dismay, right? And what they could have easily done is announced it, said, you know what we've done? We experimented with when people want more of Twitter and they tell us by refreshing twice, we're going to give you a little magic surprise of something that your friend likes. And people would be like, that's delightful. It's thoughtful.
Right.
You anticipated what I want. And because they didn't communicate about it, instead it went the exact opposite
way. You loser. You know nobody interesting.
And you ruined the experience because now I can't predict what's going to be in my stream. So now Twitter broke its promise to me about they're only going to show me stuff that I follow. And so they got the worst of both situations. And it's one of those things where you're like, you know, a one paragraph blog post could have turned this around for them if they'd got ahead of it. And it's a weird thing. Like the companies that make social platforms are usually the worst at talking about them.
It's really an object lesson in communications and marketing. Google has the same problem. And if you just announce it in a clever, creative way, you can make people very happy. You know who's good at this? Apple.
Yeah.
Apple knows. Apple is so good at it. And by the way, a great article from Mark Gurman in 9to5Mac on Apple's marketing machine and how it manipulates the media. Really a long article. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. This guy's 20 years old.
Smart kid.
When I was 20 years old, I was still wondering why I didn't get any prizes in my cereal. And he is analyzing marketing strategy at Apple like a pro. I mean, that's just not.
I loved that article. There's an interesting thing in it where he says, well, Apple manipulated coverage with an outlet by doing this, right? And he just talks about how it happens and who did it. But he sort of elides which outlet was manipulated or exactly what story it was about. So he's sort of letting the other outlet save face. And it's a very thoughtful thing to do. But the whole way through, I kept asking, well, who was being manipulated? Who got snookered by Apple on this? And he sort of, that's the only place where he pulls the punches. It's about talking about how sort of fellow reporters were.
Yeah, because he also makes a spreadsheet of which journalists receive early copies of which Mac products. And you can very clearly on your own correlate it to who gets the best Apple coverage. That's a brave thing to do. That's pretty much guaranteeing you'll be on Apple's list for some time to come.
I love that grid because that was one of the things I think I mentally had as a geek. You know, you kind of know, oh, well, that was interesting when Shenny got the iPad
right, for
Boing Boing, and I hadn't noticed that before. And I definitely remember the route getting the iPad because it was like, oh, the Apple's pretty, you know, conscientiously courting the African-American audience here, and they hadn't done that before. So that was really cool, but seeing it all laid out was
this sort of good.
They're thoughtful, right? They have a plan, and I think that is the contrast to why I get frustrated with Samsung saying let's just splatter stuff up against the wall at 10 different watches, because it's like, well, there's a lot to be said for being disciplined.
Yeah. Let me show you the spreadsheet because when you look at it, this is deep within this article. It's kind of telling because you can immediately see by the checkboxes. So the green check marks are people who got iOS device review access prior to the release. The reds are when nobody got it. And non-tech didn't get it until very, very recently. And, of course, interestingly, both Brian Klug and Lal Shimpi from non-tech have just defected to Apple. Andy and Akko.
The coverage must have been too good.
Yeah, a lot of red X's for our friend Andy. Boing Boing got two specific devices, the iPad and the iPhone 4, never again. But then you see people like, David Pogue, Ed Begg, who get green checks everywhere, even more than CNET.
I mean, Ed Begg is always interesting because he's a super talented guy, great writer. He's not a sort of tech household name like a Walt Mossberg is, but he's always been this very reliable sort of Apple voice.
And also has a bully pulpit. I mean, you can merely say, well, look, Pogue wrote for the New York Times. Begg wrote for USA Today. Those people probably should. Although here's Jason Snell, editor-in-chief of Macworld magazine, who only three times out of the total dozen got a device ahead of time. So,
well, Macworld is on the outs with Apple. But the interesting thing about it is Ed is still at USA Today. But you know, both Walt and Pogue have left their sort of big newspapers. But you see this sort of legacy, and I think in the article he says, you know, Jobs was one of those people that like judged media outlets by what he got in print as a kid. And they're still sort of saying, oh, well, this is how you do reputable and respectable is what was on Dead Trees years ago.
Yeah, because you look at Mashable, which is clearly influential, bunch of red X's. Yeah.
Yeah.
So kudos to Mark Gurman for really speaking truth to power. That's a brave thing to do when you have a media machine that is so effective.
It's also a confident thing. He knows he's got confident enough meat to what he covers that he doesn't need to rely on the sort of the kindness of the company. I think
seeing through illusion, understanding Apple's mastery of the media. And we'll see a lot of that soon.
It should be a business school case study.
Yeah.
This is how you do media.
Well, and it really stands out because so many companies do it so poorly, as in this case of Twitter, where they just turn a win into a loss. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, snatching defeat from the jaws of victory.
Yeah. Twitter is now improving the intake process. One of the issues Twitter's always had is when you sign up as a new user to Twitter, it's a little baffling. It's like, well, now what? So they've done the first redesign in 3 years of the sign-up process. You identify your interests fashion, photography, entertainment, news. And then they suggest users. They've always had a suggested users list. But it's designed to get you interested in it from the very beginning. I haven't played with it because
how is it possible they went 3 years without changing?
Isn't that odd?
Sign up. Doesn't even sound plausible, does it?
I know. Well, maybe it's wrong, but that's what it says.
They've got hundreds and hundreds of engineers.
Well, they had other things.
It feels like they're differentiating small tweaks from major overhauls.
Yeah. Right, well, and they were working on getting the Justin Bieber servers running smoothly.
Right.
Very important.
You know, speaking of favorites, the activity column in TweetDeck is amazing. It's like every single thing that your friend's favorite, like as it happens. And it just like, it's like a ticker tape. I mean, it just flies down. But that column is unbelievable. I mean, seeing your friend's favorites is actually really, really cool. The problem was that they, just like you said, that they just didn't pre-announce it and didn't handle it right.
Right. The results are in. Of course, the FCC asking for comments. Pro and con on net neutrality. Over 1 million comments came in. Fewer than 1% were against net neutrality. Well, there's a shocker. I'm against it. I don't know if that was one of your numbers. I think we pretty much covered everything. I'm just looking. Any stories you guys wanted to bring up?
I don't know if this is just amusing. Stuart Baker says you can tell whether Google thinks you're famous. You see that one?
How do you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's so minor. The right to be forgotten stuff, like Google has some sort of measure, or they indicated in their statements about it that there's some sort of measure about whether or not you're a public figure. And this article, I read this article just really quickly. So if you search for yourself or for someone who you want to know whether or not Google thinks you're a public figure, at the bottom, if Google thinks you're a public figure, it'll say results may have been removed.
Well,
from
it's the opposite, though. That's the weird thing, isn't it?
Okay, it's the other way. Right?
If you're famous, they're not going to remove stuff.
If you're a public figure, they're not going to remove stuff, right? Because it's public interest. Is that's right?
So now everybody's Googling themselves. Let me just see.
I didn't have it at the bottom of mine.
I don't have it at the bottom of mine either.
I don't have it at the bottom of mine. So I'll put in somebody who's just not famous. See if this works. You have to do it under the UK search. It has to be UK.
Right. Oh, it's in UK.
Yeah, it has to be UK because it has to be. Of course,
because it's not. It's not. Okay, so let me look for myself again in Google UK because maybe I won't be famous enough there.
I can content myself that I'm not famous in England, right? That's the issue.
Yeah. No,
that's
nothing.
Why it doesn't say it.
Nothing for me. No, if you're famous, it doesn't say anything. If you're Chad Johnson, let's see if it says anything.
Boy, yeah, that's kind of going to be an issue. Apparently,
there's quite a few Chad Johnsons.
Or Tristan Coe.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's pick somebody.
So where will it say?
Why did it offer me Chad Ochocinco?
You don't know who Chad Ochocinco is?
Ochocinco.
Chad Ochocinco. He's.
World is he related to Chad Johnson?
Sports ball.
Sports ball.
Yeah, that's why I don't like my real name.
Huh. All right.
He also
not there. If some results,
Jeff, I can't hear you.
Is not there. So that's not there for me on UK.
So you're famous. I don't know if
that's,
I buy
that
this.
That can't be right. That can't be right.
I don't buy.
Well,
it.
I mean, if you've got a Wikipedia page,
you're famous. Maybe that's how they do it.
Right?
Yeah.
You all have Wikipedia pages.
I think that's a signal.
Anil, don't you have a Wikipedia page?
I do, but I'm saying you all do too.
Yeah, we all have Wikipedia pages.
So you're all famous.
Yeah. We actually, that's one of the criteria for getting on the show.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding.
Wow. Jeff just left.
Nice. That and having a working internet connection. Google's Android Wear team says we'll update early and often. I'm still waiting for an update. And by the way, Google, you better hurry because I don't know if this watch is going to stay on my wrist much longer. There seems to be some competition coming. Well, the Moto 360, the Apple iWatch, and that ginormous watch from Samsung.
Well, the 360 is Android Wear. The ginormous watch is Tizen, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not really. I don't think Google's really worried about Tizen, are they?
No,
I don't know.
No. After seeing that watch, they'd be crazy to be worried. Go ahead, Chad. Get Jeff back. While we're getting Jeff back, I'm going to tell you a little bit about my friends at Smart.
You can't hear me.
I can hear you.
Yeah, we can.
Oh, welcome back, Jeff.
It's marvelous.
Sorry to interrupt the commercial.
We have the technology. Ochocinco.
It's Ocho Cinco.
Ocho Cinco.
It's
Ocho Cinco.
That means 85.
Yes. Yes.
You're such an Italian. You want to say the...
Ocho Cinco. Ocho Cinque. How do you say smart things in Italian? Smart things.
Yeah.
Smart things. This, my friends, this was the Kickstarter project that I kicked into way back. You did, actually, Gina, didn't you? You were a Kickstarter supporter of smart things.
I did.
Why?
2012. It was a friend of a friend who was involved with it. And honestly, you know, look, like any Kickstarter, I watched the video and like, and they got me. I wanted it. And I got to tell you, I love it. I mean, the kit that I have, I'm sure, is an early prototype compared to what they're selling now.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I've loved it. I loved it.
They have really, they solved the problem. If you have, if you're trying to have a smartphone, the issue is, of course, nothing talks to anything. And you could get a system like the SmartThings system, and that'll talk to everything in the system, but never talks to anything else. So the SmartThings hub is the cornerstone to all this. Yes, of course, SmartThing has three home security kits, four brand new solution kits, which are designed to solve specific problems, but they also integrate with your GE, Lox, your Schlage, your Honeywell Eon Nest thermostats, your Dropcam, your Philips Hue lights, your Wemo remote, and your Sonos music system. You can create an amazing array of things. You said, what are you doing? Are you having it tie into your music? What did you say, Gina?
Sensors. One of the sensors that tells you whether or not something's been open or closed, I had it hooked up to my mailbox. So when my mail came, my physical postal mail, I would get a push notification.
That's awesome. Mail's in. I like that.
Yeah, and the present sensor I had on my daughter's stroller. So when she went out for a walk and came back, I would get a push notification that she was home or she just left. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, there was some really cool. I had the lights programmed to come on when the night light to come on when at sunset, which is really nice. There were IFTT recipes. It's a really open. It's a very open platform. It's very cool. Yeah.
And now they have a maker kit, so you can integrate your Arduino project. So really, the sky's the limit. I mean, this is wide open. So every kit includes the hub, which is the key, of course, and then everything you need to turn your smart home into your home into a smart home in as little as 15 minutes. New and improved Zigbee sensors. Zigbee's one of many languages these devices talk to. You can get instant alerts to prevent a leak from causing a flood. You can be notified if there's unexpected entry or movement in your home. Control and automate your lights and small appliances. You get the idea. Pretty much the sky's the limit. Here's the deal. You can get started creating your smart home by visiting smartthings.com/twit. And if you see something you want, you're going to get 10% off the purchase price of any home security or solution kit. Just use the offer code TWIT10 at checkout. Those new solution kits do some really interesting thing. There's those home security kits, but you've got solution kits that are specific to things like energy saver, lighting automation, water detection. I mentioned the leak. The SmartThings Maker, which is the Arduino kit. So get 10% off that. Solution kits start as low as $170. Home security as low as $350 when you use the offer code TWIT10, TWIT10 on checkout. SmartThings, they really are smart, .com/TWIT. Gina, I know you want to get going, so let us get from you your tip of the week.
Yes, this was a new one to me. It's a really tiny, subtle Google Docs thing that I was unaware of, but I'm often dealing with multi-page documents in Google Docs, and I didn't realize this, but as you're scrolling through a multi-page document, there's a little tooltip on the scroll bar that tells you what page you're on. I had just never noticed it before, but there it is. It works. So, yeah, keep an eye on that if you're reviewing long, long, boring documents in Google Docs like I have been doing. Recently.
Almost done. Almost done.
Page 37 of 50.
God, maybe I don't want to know.
I'm soon to come out with a tome.
Smartass,
now that the internet has ruined everything, what next? It's 180 pages in Google Doc. It's a killer.
There you go. There, that tooltip.
It's forever to load.
What's it about again?
Okay, smartass. Now that the internet has ruined news, what next?
Oh,
it's my. Everybody says, "Okay, Jarvis, what's your view?" Okay, so finally, I had to kind of write down everything that I think, and there it is. And
what's
believe me,
next?
Important.
What's next?
It's aimed at my geeks.
I think you need to rebrand it, though. I don't think that white paper really sells it well. I think you have to try to.
No,
can you make it a Medium essay? Would it fit into the text area?
I'm going to put it all up on Medium for free because after smashing paywalls, I can't do that. And the title is Geeks Bearing Gifts.
Ah.
Not What Would Jarvis Do?
That's good, too.
That's where you got to go. I mean, that's.
What would Jeffy do?
I know exactly what that book is about. What would Jarvis do?
What would Jarvis do? Jeff, you're going to give us a number here.
Well, yeah, I just didn't know about this. Did you know about ground truth countries in Google Maps?
No.
So there's now 50 of them. And I said, what the heck is a ground truth country? So Google determines certain countries need better maps, and not that there aren't also other crowdsourced mapping solutions. So they make it an effort and bring people in to try to help improve maps and add more richness to the maps. And so they now have 50 countries that they focus on to radically improve the maps there. So I just found that vaguely interesting. Not terribly interesting, just vaguely.
That's pretty cool.
I was also desperate for a number, so when I saw 50, I jumped at it. But you know.
Well, OpenStreetMaps is a really cool idea, but this puts it into the Google Maps, which, after all, is what everybody uses. So.
Exactly. So,
cool.
There it is. It was a bad list. You know, some weeks it's funny. I'll have 20 numbers. You'll see on the list. Some weeks they're just not a number to be had.
And Neil, did you want to? It looks like you wanted to share a little something with us.
It's a Twitter account that I thought everybody should follow. It's really interesting. It's called Valley Edits. And it's a spinoff. There's a whole series of Twitter accounts. Parliament Wiki Edits out of the UK was the first, then led into Congress Edits, which also is a great follow. And Congress Edits says, anonymous members of anonymous members of the staff of Congress are making edits to Wikipedia. We should see what articles are editing. And Valley Edits is that for the big tech companies. So if you look at Twitter and Apple and Google and Facebook, what are their employees while on the clock at the job, at the office, editing on Wikipedia? Some of these are silly and light, like, you know, Apple employees editing a pressure cooker entry. But it's something where we think about, like, Wikipedia is so much of the definitive record of what culture is. Then let's see if there's any self-interest going on from these tech companies writing about things that actually directly impact them. So it's something it's nice because it's not a ton of tweets. It's not really, really noisy. But if you want to look at the impact of, like, well, how are these big tech companies trying to actually shape the world and shape culture, it can be really powerful. There's also, I think, you know, you look at the topics they're writing about, and there can be a little bit of an indication of, well, somebody over at that company thinks this topic is interesting. I wonder what the implications are for their products.
Cool. Valley Edits on Twitter, at Valley Edits. One of a whole set of these. Somebody should make a list of all of these.
Yeah, actually, if you go to Congress Edits and look at who it's following about 60 accounts right now. And most of them are government trackers. So, you know, government of Germany, what are the elected officials editing? But there's for all different things. There's from certain universities, from big tech companies. There's one for pharmaceutical companies. What are their employees editing on Wikipedia? And this view into sort of directly who's editing the information, I have found it's just a really – it makes me wish I had it for everything.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, you can go into any Google article and see who has edited it. But by IP address, you then have to match it up to Apple.
I mean, it's always been theoretically possible. But being able to really go in and just kind of have it a click, it delivered to you – between Congress Edits and Valley Edits, it's been very, very eye-opening for me.
We are going to have Kevin Marks on next week to talk about the indie web, something we're very intrigued by and excited about. I want to thank Anil Dash for being here. ThinkUp.com, now a free trial available for you. This is something new they've started doing at ThinkUp.com, and it really is.
No credit card, just go sign up.
Really is great. Normally $5 a month. And you, before the show, I guess I didn't show my ThinkUp during the show, but before the show we were going through it. It really is a great source of insight into what my tweets mean, who I'm talking to. And it's kind of fun to read, too. ThinkUp.com.
I have to be so thankful to the Twig audience. I mean, obviously Gina's on the show, but it's been sort of the core of how we've been able to get ThinkUp out in the world. So I'm so appreciative of folks that watch and listen to Twig.
Love it.
Yeah.
Hey, definitely. You, Twiggers, if you don't have ThinkUp, get it right now. It's free to try. Just, it's fun. Just
You're missing the fun.
All right.
And Gina revealed to me that really it is all about, I think it was on this show last week, that it's all about making the web a kinder, gentler place. So it's changing the world one tweet at a time. Thank you.
Which I really like. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Gina Trapani, of course, the woman behind the code, and she is also a very welcome contributor to the Twit Network on All About Android every Tuesday night. And This Week in Google every Wednesday afternoon. Thank you, Gina. I hope you feel better.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. It was a lot of fun today.
Yeah, always great to have you and Anil on. Thank you, Jeff Jarvis, for joining us from the City University of New York. We do Twig every Wednesday afternoon, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 2000 UTC on twit.tv. We'd love it if you watch live, but of course, if you can't, and I know that sometimes it's a little tough, don't worry. We have audio and video available for download for you, so you can watch anytime on demand. Just visit twit.tv/twig or subscribe using your favorite podcatcher, whether it's iTunes or whatever. Dog Catcher and Instacast. And there's so many different. Pocket Cast. Is that your favorite on Android?
Yes.
I use Dog Catcher, I think.
Yeah, Dog Catcher's great, too.
Dog Catcher. You know, you just whatever you've got your subscriptions entered into, you just kind of no incentive ever to change. We also have some great apps on Android and all the other platforms from our third-party developers, including Roku, Craig Millennium of Houdini 7 fame. He's in our chat room at Houdini 7. Does a great app for us on Roku. So find all the Twit apps. Watch whenever you can. We love having you here. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye.